All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone, and happy Friday. Welcome to the Health IT for Care Continuum Task Force under the HITECH. This is our third meeting, and we will start with a brief roll call, and then we'll have a few welcome remarks and then get into our discussion on our draft recommendations to date. So Carolyn Peterson?
I'm here.
Chris Liebman?
Good morning.
Do we have Aaron Mary yet? Hopefully he will join us later. Steve Waldron?
Here.
Chip Hart?
Here.
And Sue Cressley?
Present.
Perfect. Okay. I will hand it over to our co-chairs to get us started.
Good morning. Welcome, everyone, bright and early on this beautiful Friday. I'm really glad we're able to convene again to continue working on the pediatric recommendations and have some good discussions today. And I'll pass it on to you, Chris.
Yeah, good morning, Carolyn. Good morning, everybody. We managed to work through three recommendations last time. And, as a group, have a requirement to report out to the larger HITECH group next week. And so we'll do some expectations. Sam will do some expectation settings in a few moments. I appreciate everybody being there, and we'll try to tackle at least as many recommendations today as we did last time. Sam?
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thank you for all of your time and input, and I just want to thank and acknowledge the robust discussion from last week's call, and we're excited for the discussion today. As Dr. Liebman indicated, soon there'll be a report on the work and recommendations to date of the task force. And so I believe last week we had discussed, with anticipating that we will likely not work through the remaining seven recommendations on today's call, and anticipating that the work group members are comfortable with indicating preliminary support for the 10 recommendations, what we wanted to do was open the floor at this time to identify if any task force members anticipated wanting to recommend removal of any of the 10 recommendations. If not, then next week, what will they'll present on the progress to date with a concrete recommendation for those that have been explicitly discussed and supported, and then indicating, the remaining recommendations. Does anyone anticipate not wanting to recommend any of the 10 recommendations to bring to the group's awareness at this time? If not, then what we will do is proceed to move on to recommendation 4.
Sam, I just wanted to chime in here and say you pointed out that it was a robust discussion last time, and this group was not shy about adding limitations or narrowing the scope of the recommendations to things that are technically and socio-technically feasible. So knowing that about this group, at this point, I would like to express my support for the remaining, for all 10 recommendations, with the caveat that we will make sure that we follow a similar process for the remaining 7.
I'm totally comfortable with that. I think they all belong here. The devil's going to be in the detail.
Yeah, I think each one is a good, broad, philosophical idea. My objections would only be related to implementation. Everyone wants immunization registry interaction. It's just a matter of what requirements we're going to put into place.
And this is Steve Waldron. On that, I wanted to have a conversation about was recommendation 5. So my understanding, and please correct me if my understanding is incorrect, but my understanding is that there's not a freestanding certification kind of process for the pediatric EHR, but rather it's an optional addition to the certification process. And my understanding is immunization registries are part of the certification process. So I was trying to figure out what's the difference between this and what's generally required for any certified EHR technology.
Thank you. So this is good. So what I read the room is that there's general agreement with the tenors of the recommendation, that there clearly are concerns in the details that we hopefully as a group will be able to reach consensus on. And then, the differentiation between the general immunization requirements and the pediatric specific. And yes, Stephen, you're absolutely right. This is a voluntary, we are working on a voluntary certification for pediatric EHRs. This is in addition to the certification that EHRs are undergoing through, going through anyway.
Thank you. So this is Sam. I would just offer that two remarks. Much of the discussion around the implementation of the recommendation in practice, all of these comments will be retained, noted, and shared as part of the presentation. And we will aggregate them as an implementation consideration with specificity that correlates to each recommendation that's discussed. And then to note that the recommendation is concretely as contained in the NPRM, and the discussion regarding the implementation and practice will be noted as implementation considerations, much of which is laying the path forward for the work, to be done for the success of this in practice, as informed by stakeholders and ONC. So we can explore that further. I believe our Deputy Beth Myers will be joining us as part of this call, and so I will turn it over to her at that time when she joins us to offer some welcome.
Hi, Sam. I'm on. I had a little bit of technical difficulty this morning. I apologize, everyone. Yes, I am on now. So
I just was teeing you up, Beth. So let me turn
it
over.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
I don't know if you were able to hear some of the earlier comments of Dr. Waldron or Dr. Lehman, or if you just hopped on.
No, I did hear that. I didn't want to interrupt. I heard just as Chris was beginning to speak is when I finally managed to get things to sign on. So I think that's an excellent... Sure. It's an excellent segue. I'm super excited to get to join the task force today. I know I haven't been able to participate in the prior meetings, but I have listened to them and read through the notes. And I just wanted to take a minute to provide some context about how we got to the space that we got to with the pediatric health IT. And for those who may have been at the annual meeting, we had a session where we sort of talked about broadly the sort of the evolving role of ONC, but also some of our other federal partners in trying to fill these gaps, to work through how health IT can better support the entirety of the care continuum, sort of beyond the meaningful user is a phrase that keeps popping up when we talk about this. So I wanted to take an opportunity, I'm going to go as quickly as I can because I know we have a lot to get through today, but to maybe give some framing and context that might be helpful. Some of you have probably been part of these conversations. Some of you, it may be a little newer, a little different than how we've talked about things. The construct that that Chris has described is absolutely right. So for the rule, what we have to do is sort of go to the statutory authority and set these recommendations and identify the specific certification criteria that would be adopted under this construct of voluntary certification for pediatric health IT. But how that fits into the broader context, and we do have, I think we have a tip sheet now that helps to sort of describe this too. We know that that's not the end, right? We know that that's not the limit to the chain or the limit to the need, and that I think you'll hear Steve Posnack say over and over again that we view certification very much as a floor. So the way we've kind of begun to evolve this process and sort of describe this process is essentially a three-part construct, where the first part is very much in line with the recommendations that have landed in the rule and are landing in your laps. The idea of there are ways that health IT can support really big, broad things, right? Like we say health IT supports care coordination, or we say health IT supports patient access. And those are really big, broad things, and that's wonderful. But contextually, they really need to be supporting clinical priorities. They really need to be supporting the clinical needs of care providers in a care setting. So that's sort of that first part, that thinking through what is the clinical priority that health IT can facilitate that is a care improvement goal or a care need that on a daily basis we do X thing that is absolutely essential to providing care to our patient population, and we need health IT to support that better. So that's sort of the part one, and that's what you see reflected in those recommendations, which came from work with stakeholders, they came from prior work in the Children's EHR format, and sort of coalesced around, you know, here's these 10 that we're hearing very loud and clear clinical related recommendations. So the second part for ONC's point of view is the certification program. What can the certification program do, or what does it do, and how do those functionalities that we're setting as here is the floor that everyone must have that can be supportive of those clinical priorities, of those recommendations. And then from there, how can we build upon that floor? How can we ensure that that floor fits the room in which it's working? So that's really the third part and the third idea of the construct, that there is work that has to come beyond the certification program. There are implementations that need to be informed. There are, I know there was some discussion in the last one with someone sort of specifically mentioned that it sounds like a lot of this is future work. I think it was in relation to some clinical decision support constructs as well. So there are these other pieces that need to fit in to the tech in order for it to work appropriately in the setting. They might be implementation guidance. They might be specific thoughts around how you do a training and workflow. They might be tools or resources like I'm not going to name any specific ones, but we all know probably what I'm going to talk about, bodies of work that are really robust clinical decision supports that need to be electronically transformed so that they can be easily accessible and dynamically used, not as just a pop-up, but as a useful tool within an EHR. So we really see that third part as a collaborative effort as well, similar to the sort of the first part of setting the clinical priorities in the first place. So a lot of this really informative, deep implementation pieces that we're talking through, that you've talked through so far, that we're going to be still talking through today, inform that work. They are that future direction work of how we work together to build this. How does Health IT from ONC, but also from our federal partners, we have an opportunity to work with them and inform them and help them be setting policies that support this as well. And how does the industry come together around these ideas? So that's a really essential part of what you all are doing, is putting in a very important public forum that is the Federal Advisory Committee, the thoughts and these pieces behind the what comes next and what is the unique implementation here. So I hope that that helps set some frameworks. You can kind of see that how the three pieces of what you're talking about also align with sort of the three pieces that are and it's a sort of simple construct to try and describe a complicated process, but that's sort of what we envision. So I don't want to discourage anyone from talking about those deeper implementations that are more unique, but I do want to make sure that we're capturing the idea of the certification as a floor upon which these other things are that may involve future work or that may have current existing things but need to be considered are sort of building so that we can have that framework for context. And with that, I will stop taking up time that should be done with discussion and pass it back.
Thank you, Beth. This is Chris. And, you know, I think that this was very helpful for level setting and expectation setting. You know, while you are already thinking at the third phase on how to improve upon it, I just started thinking about the second phase, about the actual certification implementation, and I actually happened to talk to one of the certification bodies yesterday about you know, how the use case development for these recommendations is the next big work effort that needs to be done. So this is really helpful to put it in perspective and to remind us that, yes, what we're doing today is the basic minimum requirement for pediatrics, and we will have to build upon it, both in the making this actually actionable for the certification process, but also in the tightening the screw going forward. And I think I want to remind us that we are the first group that work on the specialty-specific certification. So our example will have a big impact on other specialties that seek a specific modification to certification as in regards to their specialty. So people will look at this, so it's important that we get this right.
Sort of a no pressure statement, right?
That's right.
But I know we I will say we sort of feel that way too. We're excited. This is has been a really wonderful process and a really good learning process for us. And so I do want to I very much want to thank you all for joining and being part of this and for the work that has gone into it, because to Chris's point, this is a model for how things can go and could be thought about to try and get beyond the sort of, I'm going to say it again, but the statement of the beyond the meaningful use and how do we support things beyond the sort of baseline things and make sure that they work. So I will again stop and we can get into the meat of the discussion.
Thank you. So I think the first item today in regards to the recommendation is for us to talk about recommendation number 4. I suspect this is going to be challenging, and so will be 5. The recommendation 4 is the segmented access to information. The descriptor for this item says the system shall provide users the ability to segment healthcare data in order to keep information about minor consent services private and distinct from other content of the record, such that it's not exposed to parents or guardians without the minor's authorization. And, you know, we at the last time we talked about the fact that we used to think about this in the context of reproductive health and sexually transmitted infections, but in this day and age, it actually goes beyond that. I reminded you of the young man who testified to Congress about obtaining immunizations, so against his parental wishes. So these kind of things are things we need to consider as well. So I'll just go ahead and open the discussion and see what concerns or restrictions you have about this particular recommendation.
Well, this is Steve Waldron. I think the challenge is really in the implementation. I would assume that you're going to talk about just having a shadow chart that's part of the record. Otherwise, it's difficult to say. For like those immunizations, then it's like, okay, well then, there's no immunizations on the immunization list, or like for problems, or just the notion of it being able to bleed out into other parts of the record, since we don't have the semantic definition enough for the EHR to be able to know that, oh, anything about immunization shouldn't be included.
I think this is a very, very good point, Steve. So how do you actually implement this? Because, you know, the challenge is not just in what is in the chart, what is on the portal, but also what gets sent out in form of billing information. You know, I mean, I'm always, you know, I'm the father of a 22-year-old daughter, and she when she seeks healthcare services, I get a bill that still comes to me because she's as a college student still enrolled in my health insurance. Now, I make a point of not looking at it, but you know, the issue extends to the billing as well, and to what insurance carriers do with the billing information on their end. So this is actually goes. This is an issue that goes beyond the EHR, but also goes into the issue of insurance and how it is provided. As for the EHR, my vision would be that this would be you know, that one possible solution, and I would love to hear pushback, that one possible solution might be to tag data as confidential, and then based on that meta tagging, that the information is handled differently when it's being released or when it's sent out. So I'm going to stop here and see what others think.
Chris, this is Al from ONC. What you just stated or just asked as a potential solution is really at the core of what the DS4P standard proposes, that each that any particular data element could be tagged with not only privacy, you know, view privacy, but also share privacy or redisclosure, and those security standards are well established, and they're the same security standards that are part of the current data segmentation for privacy standard, but those only apply to the CCDA document. Because we only adopted a part of that HL7 standard, the DS4P standard. So what you're talking about is exactly the proposed solution. But as Dr. Waldron pointed out, implementation's is the devil. And
yep.
some of the data elements may not have, you know, currently don't have the metadata fields to handle them. Some of them don't, and so that would require some remodeling of some of the data elements, particularly the ones that don't already have. Like immunizations may not have currently the data fields may not be able to hold privacy security tagging, but other ones that are more typically associated with privacy security concerns may have, but it might well require a significant remodeling in implementation. There are all that said, there are pilot implementations of the full DS4P standard to use as a guide. So that's to throw that out there.
This is Sam. I would just in reference to Al's statement, just alert folks on the worksheets if people have those handy for recommendation 4. When we look at alignment with proposed new or updated certification criteria, the second and third bullet delineate the data segmentation for privacy proposals in the rule that are not in the care continuum section in the other part of the rule. And as the task force members recall, in addition to discussing this specific recommendation, there is also part of the charge in the scope of the task force is regarding the recommendation put forward on data segmentation for privacy in the rule itself, which again is presented in the second and third bullet of the technical worksheets under aligned proposed new or updated cert criteria. Sorry for interjecting that. I just wanted to give folks a reference. Thank you.
No, that was very helpful, Sam, and thank you, Al, for referring to that, because I think that the data segmentation for privacy is a great path towards achieving this recommendation.
Sue, I suspect you and I are going to say the same thing, so you go first, and I'll see how much we differ.
I think we overtalked Steve. Steve, you had something else to add.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I mean, just to be clear. So, I mean, I think, and I agree with that focusing on this. I think the challenge is that that one then, is it only that I put things in a consolidated CDA that it would be up for segmentation? And then the other question is kind of from the semantics, well, what is a data element? Is that a clinical statement? Is that part of the narrative normative part of the consolidated CDA? Is it the entire normative text, or is it a paragraph, a sentence, a word? So I think the challenge is that you may be able to put it only in the consolidated CDA, but then if it's sitting in a paragraph in something, or like Chris talked about, goes out to, through a bill, that you have that leakage. So then you have this false sense of, oh, well, this is secured information where it's going to leak out kind of all over the place. But I mean, I agree with Chris in regards to that's the right way to implement it. But then at what level of granularity is that tagging? Is it individual words in the EHR? And that becomes a nightmare, unfortunately, for our folks that are trying to build these types of solutions.
So this is Sue, and I would caution us to not get stuck in a perfect end goal, because we'll still be having this conversation in 10 years. I wanted to solve this 10 years ago, right? So I think the right answer is that we start to lead EHRs to be able to protect granular data elements in their system so that it doesn't, and we don't have a standard for it yet of like, you know, do you do it by clinical user role, et cetera. But we should agree that the EHR should have some way, and I don't think you should get to the word level, but you should certainly get to the major sections of if it's a problem list item that is sensitive, you have the on the chart, you have the ability to protect it there, and when it goes in the CDA, because it's not just when it goes other places, it's also within the EHR. If an adolescent wants to disclose to me that they had an abortion and not have, you know, their father, the neurosurgeon, see it, we should have the ability to do that on the chart level, and then also talk about data exchange. And so what I would say that we should look for something that says the EHR should have the ability to protect granular data level at the element level. Don't hide the problem list, hide that specific problem. Don't hide the med list, hide that med. And if an EHR, you know, people are dictating notes, have the ability to make that note sensitive. I think we are not quite ready to talk about what happens in billing data. And I would like to start the process moving forward here. I also think, and I would love to hear from the ONC folks, does DS4P also have a standard nomenclature that says something in this section has been withheld? So I, as a clinician, know to go to the patient and close the door and say, there's something on your problem list that's missing. There's no one else in the room. What do I not know that I should know about you? Is there a standard for that in that standard?
Actually, Sue, you did say some things similar, but some different things than I was about to hit on, if that's okay. I think the focus on the CDA is great, but the privacy issue goes far beyond that. We've bumped into it a little bit, but first of all, we have legal standards that aren't defined. You know, in the state of New York, you're required by law to put the diagnosis on the bill. And then you're also required by law to protect adolescent privacy and hide that diagnosis everywhere else. And so as the vendors who are trying to merge these things together, we create impossibilities all the time. So one thing that we need to get our heads around are the lack of legal standards. I also think, more importantly, even if we have a way within the data to identify those things which are private and which are not and so forth, I think the UI issue here is insanely enormous. To go to look at any typical pediatric chart note, which is fairly standard and straightforward, and realize that we might be able to segment it all the way down to individual problem list items, or maybe even that the kid got an HPV shot, okay, to create a UI that would allow that level of segmentation, and then within that segmentation indicate from a long list of care providers, because that's the item just above here, who's allowed to see this thing and who's not, depends fantastically on users in a way that it will never, I don't think it'll ever actually work well. And if you talk about whatever. You talk about the burnout that we're getting in from EHR users. Take your chart note and overlay some sort of privacy template on top of that, on top of it, with hundreds of opportunities to click and unclick things based on the granularity that you want for privacy. That scares me a lot. And I'm not saying that's the only way to do it. I'm perfectly familiar with, you know, how to make a lot of those things easier and better. But I think what we're asking, what we're basically doing, is looking at the clinicians and saying, you guys are going to bear the biggest burden of what is going to be considered private, and you're the ones who are going to get in trouble if it's wrong. You're the ones who are going to have to be the perfect gatekeepers of it. And from a UI perspective, I'm really worried. And this comes up a lot. Sue and I deal with this very differently than I think a lot of other vendors do when it comes to, because of our patient portals. Most vendors just simply lock down patient portals and say, okay, each patient has an individual record. And they resolve, that's how they resolve segregation of clinical information. But when you're dealing with pediatrics, you're dealing with family records, and you're dealing with a single parent needing instant access to each of her four kids, not having to sign in to four different portal records. And to suddenly segregate some data within, you know, her daughter turned 16 and suddenly some data is segregated, that becomes really tricky from a UI perspective. From a data background perspective, it's actually a little more academic. I hope that makes some sense. I agree with Sue. I'm not suggesting we throw this out. I want to find those places where we can get better with this data privacy segmentation. But until we have some better legal standards and some better clinical understanding of what's appropriate, I think this one is going to be a struggle to do well for a long time.
Can I go back to the question from the ONC?
This is Beth. I was going to come back to that, but I wanted to make sure I wasn't interrupting any further discussion. So I think that we probably need a little bit more expertise in the very granular work around DS4P, although Al may be able to provide a little bit more context than I can, but I wanted to start from the high level of it. The DS4P standard from HL7, so it is CCDA-based, but that doesn't mean that it only can live as a CCDA move. So it is a tagging mechanism and a tagging protocol that allows you to put metadata tagging within the system that can then be part of what is exchanged through CCDA. We did also propose in the rule one Firebase solution, which is another sort of ancillary piece. There are lots of folks who are exploring API solutions for this that get to some of what, and I apologize, I didn't recognize the voice to know the name, what the last commenter was talking about as well, that, for example, if you have a parent with multiple children and you have these different pieces that are tagged, how does that work when you have multiple records and multiple portals, and how does that change that dynamic? So we are looking specifically at the consent to share resource in the rule. There are other tools that are being developed that are like this that essentially allow you to use an API to pull that data to manage consent and do more dynamic things with how you're re-aggregating that data or using that data or potentially putting that data with other sources of records or using it for other purposes. Because remember, apps don't have to just be the app on the patient's iPhone. We expect there to be a fairly rich app environment that supports providers as well. It is one way that you can sort of turn the database of an EHR into something more dynamic for specific use cases, is to think about it that way. So we are exploring that in the rule as well. To the last commenter's point, there is a lot of other work that is not tech work that needs to be understood and better fleshed out, I think, for everyone's benefit. The variance in state laws is a really significant example. When we look on the OUD side, the Part 2 conflict to state law conflict to HIPAA conflict with all of the different privacy and security options out there. That is why within the rule we did try and narrow the focus of these two criteria, which is why they've been put on your laps as opposed to one of the other task force groups, to really think through, are these tools that if we're at least narrowing to the use case of peds, which I recognize is still a huge use case, but it is less than all patients all the time, right? Is this a more feasible thing for developers to start digging in on and coming up with ways to get from where we are, which is that providers are still responsible for this and have to do it by hand, to where we want to be, which is that machines are exercising the rules for providers, and providers are sort of the quality check to make the intelligent decision about it or the rational decision about it, but the machine can follow the rules. So that's why it's here, but I hear what you're saying about the specific questions on exactly where what the standard can and can't do. It is a tagging standard. It is based on how to tag the data itself. So some of the more dynamic things, it by itself isn't going to trigger a clinical decision support to say, you know, don't disclose in this particular instance, but it could be used to build such a thing. So I think that might help to frame the where this piece fits, and I hope that we can think a little bit about where that FHIR construct might fit as well.
Thank you. To get back to the limitation or restriction of this recommendation, are there any suggestions from the group of what kind of fence we should put around this problem and say we want to use this for this particular space, let's say for portal use, or we want to use it for CDAs only. Are there any thoughts about how we could limit this recommendation so that it becomes implementable?
So I would, you're looking about where the data is going. I'm looking about where the data is tagged, and I'm going to push back on Chip a little bit because it is the relationship of the provider with the patient that has to make the decision about what's shareable. That is not something that we can, give to anybody else, in my opinion. Eventually, you may get to the point where, you know, the family or the kid, but then it's harder in adolescence, right? Because when can the parents decide and when can the kid decide? And we're not going to change state laws. But I would like to see this say that the EHR does allow at the user level to tag a individual problem list item, an individual medication, or an individual note. I mean, I think you pick like four or five big things.
Mm-hmm.
And protect it at the user can protect it when they enter the data in some way. And, you know, we can get as specific about using the DS4P standard as I have to admit I didn't read the whole thing and probably can't. But as a step to then not let, and then use that tagging to not have it, show up in a CDA or a portal or an exit note that you give to another provider, right, that you print out. So just saying that you're tagging it at, pick the big five. I don't care. Let's start it in the CDA, right? Don't hide the whole CDA, but the five sections. It's a place to start so we can start getting people to think about it. Not only do they have to let the user restrict its privacy in some way, but also then when they run a report or send a CDA or it goes to the portal, that privacy is respected when you're exchanging the data in another place. And I would just say that, right? Like, let's not get to the point what goes to a CDA and what goes to whatever. If a user wants, since we can't protect it on the other end yet, it shouldn't go, right, is my opinion. Anything that the clinician user decides is sensitive enough to tag, we should protect from being sent because we can't protect it on the other end yet.
Yeah, and if I could just add, I think Sue's suggestion here of picking some of the obvious items first and getting some sense of how they work is a good one. Obviously, protecting immunizations, you know, Dr. Lehman, your example is a very timely one, but as we know, for every one of those, there are 10 million immunizations that don't need privacy, and you know that's an edge case. And so I think, and I know you didn't mean it that way. And so I think
absolutely,
yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. There are other things that are more important.
Right. But however, the thing I'm trying to avoid, Sue, is a bunch of nerds, and I'm calling all of us that, but maybe I'll just call myself that, but I mean that in a nice way. You know, a bunch of people in a room saying, hey, the way that we're going to solve this is by allowing a discrete element, for every discrete element in the EHR, user, the clinician, the doctor can go in and choose from among the 8 care providers for this, or who are linked to this patient, and individually decide for each element which combination of 8 care providers should be able to see these elements. I know that's not what people are suggesting, but I also know from a lot of software development that's exactly what happens with committee decisions like this.
Is there something in DS4P which talks about a clinician level of role? Like a front desk versus clinical user versus provider versus whatever. Most EHRs there's no standard there, right?
The standard is agnostic and could theoretically even be done, like if you built a way to do it, you could have a patient who is identifying things for tagging. It's about the tagging portion.
Tagging, go ahead, Al.
Yeah, Al.
So your point about there's not a way to. This is about the data itself. This is about marking the data. What happens once you are able to mark the data that can rest within the EHR? It's what happens next. It's the rules that are applied to those data. Whether it's what do we put into a CCDA, or what do we display on screen? We only display the last 30 days of meds, or we only display untagged data elements, or we only display CBCs and not Chem7s. You know, that it's the rules for display and the rules for sharing that is really probably the hardest part, probably harder than, you know, what do we call it? How do we tag a data element? But so the rules about how those tagged data elements are used are not part of DS4P. And that would be part of that implementation. Is the rules are, you know, if you're a PA, you don't get to see it. If you're an MD, you do. But the rules act on those tagging elements.
So to jump in here quickly, I think the reality in the world as we live it right now is that pediatricians are dealing with this problem every darn day. You know, anybody who takes care of adolescents is exposed to this problem. And what the proposal on the table here says is, you know, at least let's introduce a tagging standard that allows various people, including the patient herself, to tag information as privileged and confidential. And with that ability, I think downstream work of how to manage it will evolve pretty much organically. Once you have the ability to tag information, the managing and handling of it will follow suit. So I think we should focus on the proposal on the table. Is this something that we really want to see?
Yes. But I want to also go back to a question that I asked that wasn't answered, which is there standard nomenclature that says, along with the CDA that got sent, that's got protected information, to tell me as an end user that there is protected information that I'm missing? So I'm not, because that's a patient safety issue to me.
I need to know.
I don't want to make an assumption that I'm seeing the whole thing when I'm not.
Yeah. Ms. Waldron, that's a conversation that gets to be a kind of a circular conversation in the privacy piece, because the fact that you know something's missing can help you try to figure out what that piece is missing. There are some people that say that even knowing that something's missing is a breach of privacy and shouldn't be known. I mean, from a clinician standpoint, you always assume that you don't know everything and that there could be something missing. But I don't know if it's in there, but that does get into a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, and Sue, I think if you're concerned from a liability issue, I think if you don't have something in your chart, then you can't be held accountable not acting upon it. That's my approach to that. And, you know, if this is a function, of privacy. You know, it's a trade-off that is chosen, you know, by the people that ultimately do the tagging. So I think I don't think I would worry about it as much as you do.
Sue, this is Al again. I don't know the answer to your question. I think and I'll check on it and I'll get back with the group at our next meeting. I do believe that the answer is no. It has to do with whether or not it's suppressed or not. It has to do with how the display is rendered. So if you're rendering a CCDA, that sort of notice of suppression may be produced as part of the rendering of the CCDA. But I'll get back to the group on whether it's in DS4P or whether it's in CCDA. I suspect it may be in CCDA, but I'll let everybody know.
Thank you.
So let me sum up the discussion so far. I think what I heard is that the overall recommendation from this group is that this is a huge piece. This recommendation bites off a huge piece, and we need to narrow it down. And the recommendation at this point is to coalesce on the notion that we want to have an ability to tag information as private, and that we at this point not worry about what is being done with that information, but that we introduce a way for information to be tagged and labeled such, so then that vendors and pediatricians and family practitioners and who else can determine what to do with that information downstream at this point by themselves, and at later point we'll hope we'll have the ability to fine-tune this and also come up with some recommendation about the transmission and sharing of these data elements. Did I sum this up correctly? Did I meet the I don't hear any violent objections.
I agree with the spirit of what you said.
Okay. All right.
Thanks.
So are there any other issues that people want to raise in this, the conjunction of recommendation 4? If not, then I would move on to 5.
Chris, this is Sam. Just from a procedural perspective, the group is supporting or recommending recommendation 4 for inclusion. And is there any correlated criteria identified that anyone would suggest removing as a correlated item identified at this time?
Oh, thank you for keeping me on the straight and narrow.
Sure.
So that you're talking about the aligned item in the criteria, right?
Correct.
So that's the data segmentation for privacy. There is the core data interoperability thing, data segmentation for privacy, we talked about it, and application program interfaces. So those were the things that were linked to this.
And this is Walter. Chris, based on your summary, I think the transitions of care and the API maybe ones that would not apply if we're talking about just tagging and not talking about use at this particular point in time.
That's how I would understand it too. All right. So that means we're off to the next recommendation, which is number 5. I expect another robust discussion on this one. Synchronize immunization histories with registry. The description was the system shall support updating and reconciling a child's immunization record with information received from immunization information systems or other health information exchanges. And Al, do you want to walk us through the aligned things?
hang on a second. Let me just look at the screen so I'm reading the same. The standards. This is one of the requirements or the recommendations that we feel like has largely already been met by the existing criteria. So the correlated criteria primarily include immunization, immunization history and forecasting, which is part of the certification current certification criteria. And the sort of the next comment is an implementation comment, but this is a well established and fairly high penetration functionality that's in place, and it does apply both to peds and adult immunizations. And so I think that I don't have a lot more to say, and I continue to confirm with our public health folks at ONC that this is a fairly highly implemented standard for people that are using certified EHR technology. The interface with the state immunization registry is in place and it's in use, I don't believe that there are any requirements for pediatric immunizations that are not met by the immunization history and forecasting function that's part of certified technology. Now, as I understand it, you can certify EHR technology without certifying to that specific standard. It's one of the pick list of criteria, but it is very widely used in certified technology.
Except it's really ugly.
Well,
and non-usable. So the question that I have is there some way here that we actually make it functional? And you know, part of this we know, and I know there's a work group at ERA on certifying the IIS space of it, because some of the data exchange is problematic on what's coming back and the way they store data. I mean, I've had a bidirectional ability to reconcile for 8 years. But it still doesn't work in a way that a user can count on it, which is sad to me. So the question I have is, do we add some nuance to this that makes it have a little bit more teeth and legs so that users can feel like they can count on it? Now, the new spec goes a long way, and ERA trying to get IISs to certify is going to go a long way to getting there. But do we have an opportunity here to say something about usability? I don't know.
This is Waldron. I mean, I think Alan kind of made my case of why I thought this one maybe could be removed. The only two things, one is this description talks about reconciliation of the immunization record. So I don't know that that's part of the current certification piece. But I think the real challenge, and it was starting to be laid out in the conversation that we just started to happen, I don't think this is an EHR problem. I think this is an IIS problem. I just can't see a pediatric-focused EHR that if there was a single API that was implementable to do bidirectional exchange with state registries, that they would not implement that ASAP. And I don't know that we can do anything to push, because we're just pushing on the wrong part of the ecosystem here. We need to push on the IIS, not on the EHRs.
Well, yeah. I'm going to push back a little bit. I'm going to push back in a little bit, because there are some EHRs where, like, it's done in bulk by some IT person who reconciled it, and the clinical user doesn't have a chance to see who made the decision. And why all of a sudden do I have an IPV and an OPV for the same date for the same kid? That's not right. There's something wrong about that, right? So, or I know, for example, that I send the CVX code for hepatitis A in a granular way to my IIS, and they store it in their IIS as hepatitis A NOS, and then they send it back to me that way. And I look at those, and I'm smart enough to know that I know what's happening, but my nurse isn't. She just imports stuff, right? Sync, registry, import, which then has a safety issue. So my question, is there a piece on the EHR that we can, and I don't know what the answer is, I'm just raising the question, so that this is the right information in front of the right user at the right time problem, right? And do we have the ability in this to say, you know, because some EHRs are swallowing some of the messages that's coming back and not actually displaying them, or they're displaying it to an administrator who logs in once or whatever. You really need it at point of care. And I don't know that that's delineated in the current testing requirements.
If that was the recommendation, I'd support that fully.
Sue, I think you probably know better than I do that that problem of getting the wrong hepatitis back from the IAS may have very, very much to do with this problem about not certifying the IAS, not certifying the vocabulary of immunizations, not having them do things consistently. So I think that exploring, I think I'll let Beth speak for this, but we are certifying the EHR and the functionality of the EHR and not the IAS, which I think pushing on the rope is a pretty good analogy.
Yeah, I think you've sort of summarized it exactly right there, that there are limitations to our authorities, but we hear you. So I think that this discussion is the type of thing that does need to be captured. I think with the certification part of it, as Al pointed out, it's we're on the provider tech end. We do have relationships that work with public health and with states, so there are channels by which the rest of the information does get shared. So I would not be shy about expressing it, put it that way.
Okay. If I could add one quick thing, I was doing an analysis of the surveillance data that's posted on the ONC site. I wanted to see what sort of problems vendors were being surveyed for and or surveilled, I guess. I'm sorry. And the number one item was the lack of transparency posting on the websites. I thought that was kind of funny. But the number two item, the thing that is most attracting the attention of the auditors, is the vaccine registry interaction. And I have not dug into it at all to determine what the common factor is, what the problem is there. But it strikes me that the 2015 certification as written may not be, we have some proof that it's not being implemented well. And so I'm supporting Sue's position here, or that there's something to the way that the language is written that is not getting us the result that we want. It is the number one true software-driven item picked up by the auditors from the data that I saw. And I also think we might. I just want to be clear. I'm in full agreement with this one, but I think we want to. If we were to make any kind of amendments, I think we really want to drive back to what the reason for this item is. Again, I'm in Sue's place right here. This is about getting that right information at the right time to the right person. What we're trying to do here is avoid missed opportunities to immunize, and occasionally avoid opportunities to over-immunize. We don't know better. Those are much less rare. In my mind, or my experience, I will say, that syncing with the state registry is not a huge gain there. It's not. All right. Most practices are pretty jealous of their data, and they're better about it than the state is, more often than not. Not always, but more often than not. And the word that's buried in the worksheet that's really important, and it is part of the existing certification, is the forecast line. And that's really the most important item here. And Sue and I both know that is done really, really poorly. And I don't know if this is a major scope creep, and I'm not trying to do that, but boy, if we could somehow shore this up or just get a reminder in here, the goal is to make sure we're not missing opportunities to immunize.
Well, and when you get to the forecast, Chip, we also have a problem in that, and I don't know if this group has any ability to influence it. ACIP recommendations come out in the MMWR, and then there's huge lag of what this adoption curve is, and it's very variable, right? So the clinician knows when it's in the MMWR, I'm supposed to do X. And you could be getting misinformation from your EHR or your IIS that's not in keeping with that for up to a year or more. And that's problematic to me. So, you know, whether you harmonize timing of updates, you know, again, I don't know how you test that or even put that in there, but it is a patient safety concern in that the other piece of this is, And if we're going to go to patient safety at some point, trainees and young physicians are learning to use software in their training programs, and they think they all work the same. And so it's like, well, why did my EHR tell me this kid was due for a yada, 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 right? So we have to be, and Chip brought this up in the last time, where are you getting your data from?
Yeah, right. Great point.
What are you using as your source of truth? How often do you update it? You know, do you have a contract with your users that you will update within 3 months of the MMWR recommendations? And what is that source of truth that you're using it from? Just so that people can decide from the clinical standpoint, how reliable is this? Because it's decision support. This is the most important clinical decision support that pediatricians have. The most, hands down. And if it's not reliable or accurate, or you don't know the source of it or how recently it's been updated, that's a big issue.
I couldn't agree more. I'm totally on board with Sue here.
Yeah, so this is an interesting discussion to me, because what this points to is what we have been talking about as pediatricians for a while is, you know, that every state registry reinvents the wheel when it comes to the forecasting piece, and they have to do it every year anew. You know, there's actually a great need to have one federal resource to do this, and you know, it kind of seems to be logical to me to have it linked to the people that actually come up with the immunization requirements. But that's besides the point here. Now, I want to go back to the discussion. Essentially, what I've heard is we are doing this already. The certification, as it comes to the existing certification, covers a lot of that. But I also heard that you would love to have something built in there that would push on the existing registries to improve their act. Is there any concrete recommendation that you could formulate that we could add to this, or is this more of a, we would like them to be better, but we don't have anything that we don't have a forcing function that the EHR could introduce to the registry?
Well, we have one problem. I'll jump ahead of, because the natural answer to that, Dr. Lehman, is, oh, yeah, we'd really like them to all adhere to the proper standards. But one of the problems that Sue and I run into all the time is, even when you have an IIS saying, oh, yeah, we do bidirectional and we follow the standard, it could be a year before you could actually add one of your customers to their interface list. And something we have practices who've been queued up for multiple years at different states. And so one of the problems here is, even when everyone's on the standard, the states have either a lack of interest or a lack of resources, it's some combination, depends on the state, to even allow this to happen. I mean, it's one of the ironic aspects of this requirement is that even if all the EHR vendors did it flawlessly, which will obviously not happen, the majority of people in the United States, or majority of pediatricians in the United States, can't take advantage of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, usually at this point I would launch into a tirade about how pediatrics is the redheaded stepchild as when it comes to meaningful use and related issues. But in this case, I can't because this affects adults as well. So, yay, at least they're sharing our pain once that they're dealing with 57 different rules and requirements, right? So, hey, you know, so at least we're not suffering alone. Now, that doesn't solve the issue. So I think what I hear out of this discussion is a strong recommendation that, you know, this might be a future work for ONC to look into a way of consolidating these different state immunization registry forecasting models into a single resource that would reduce the amount of time it takes to update immunization forecasting, and also in some work that ONC could do that looks into the time to onboarding of practices for immunization forecasting and identifying ways of how the federal government can help. But overall, I say the discussion says this is a good recommendation, but there's nothing much that we can do to tighten the screw at this point. Is that a fair summary?
That works for me.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Al, anything that related to the alignments that were in this recommendation that you want to add? Give you the last word there.
No, I don't really have anything else. No, I don't think so. I think I've already said. I think I already said it.
Okay, thank you. So, how are we doing on time, Sam? Do you want to give me a check on whether it's reasonable to attempt the next recommendation?
Oh, thank you for asking. Lauren and Cassandra, what is your recommendation?
Yeah, we have time. We've got like 12 minutes before we need to go to a public comment.
Great.
Okay.
So let's proceed with recommendation 6.
All right. Age and weight specific single dose range checking. This is aligned with the recommendation 2, I think, where we talked about dose range checking. Calculation of doses based on weight and body surface area. And we put some significant restrictions on that recommendation based on what is feasible and manageable. This recommendation says that the system shall provide medication dosing decision support that detects a drug dose that falls outside the minimum maximum range based on patient's age, weight, and maximum recommended adult dose if known, or maximum recommended pediatric dose if known for a single dose of the medication. I want to lead off the discussion with my experience. We looked at 13,000 dose range alerts that we built for Hopkins in a previous EHR version. So we built 13,000 rules that was table driven, and we looked at how these recommendations were followed. I think that paper might have been in the materials that we sent. If not, I will send it to ONC. So it can be distributed to the group. And bottom line is, for the most part, the minimum recommendations were completely not useful. So minimum dose recommendations, we built them because our pharmacist insisted on them for antimicrobials, and it turns out that they created an enormous amount of noise. Especially erythromycin, as an example. Erythromycin has a minimum dosing range if you use it as an antibiotics, but if you use it as a motility drug, your minimum recommendation range is much lower, and so it generated noise based on the antibiotic recommendation. We also found that letting providers know that there is no dose recommendation, and we have that here, if known, is completely useless. It just creates noise. So we learned from this, if we don't have any dose range recommendation, we should be quiet about it. So those were take-home messages on my end. So I want to open this discussion and ask you what limitations we want to put on this recommendation, if any. I think we probably want to consider similar limitations as we did on the dose calculation we did on item two.
So I will just tell you, as my vendor hat, I don't want to make clinical decisions for my users about what that is. I don't feel like that's in our domain to decide what those high dose alerts are. We don't have a team of informatics clinicians to make that decision for our users. What I do think needs to happen is that we need to be able to give the user access to best practices or standards as they're writing the prescription. And whether, you know, it's FDB or somebody who has that and brings it back and displays it to you, if available, or there's a hyperlink in your at your medication level where the user can go and look. We're creating, again, I think, a patient safety issue in that hospital systems and implementations generally have people with pharmacists who decide that for them. Those of us in the ambulatory space don't have that, and we don't try to make those clinical recommendations as EHR vendors for our users. We like to pass through information when we have it, and I think that's where we should target. And I think minimums is not even worth talking about. My two cents.
Let me parse through what you just said. So you say that you would, in your situation, you would rely on third-party resources like you brought up FDB. There are other databases that have similar information. So you would refer to implement resources in the EHR that come from people that aggregate and distribute knowledge in that domain, and that you recommend the integration into the EHR of these resources. Did I hear you right, or did I?
Yes, with clarity of where that information is coming from. So again, the clinician can decide, the user can decide how reliable that information is and whether they want to follow it or not. That's what I think is right for the ambulatory space.
This is Al. This discussion aligns perfectly with the recommendations within the NCPDP script standard. When they talk about dose ranges, there's a specific note that addresses dose range recommendations, and they specifically say, you know, NCPDP is not going to be the decider, and so we're not going to put that functionality within the e-prescribing standard. And that third party, it should come from pharmaceutical companies. It could come from like a Harriet Lane resource, for example. Like, that, wouldn't that be cool if that was digitized into the EHR? And you could say the Harriet Lane recommendations is this for this drug for this kid, those sorts of things. So a third party is exactly aligned with what the recommendations are from NCPDP.
I think even Lexicomp
or others, there's a bunch of them, right? It's just,
yeah.
I think you need to tell what the source is and give them the source so they can make a smart decision.
Right. I just would like to point out to another resource, HRQ funded a research project that actually involved the authors of the Harriet Lane. It was called Step Stools. And it created a database of dosing recommendation for pediatric drugs. Subsequent work that was sponsored has updated that database. So this is another open, available, free, open resource that the U.S. government created. So I think I'm happy to. Get you into get ONC the connection to the people that are still working on this.
And who says we're not here to help?
Excellent.
This is Chip. I just want to go on record as saying I agree with Sewell wholeheartedly. We do not want the EHRs in the clinical decision-making business. We want the clinicians in that business. And the one addition I'd add to wanting to cite your source is that we would also, I would ideally love to have some sort of ability to test an EHR's accuracy in this regard. It's one thing to say, hey, look, it works. I'm pointing at the Harriet Lane line item resource for this, potential maximum overdose. But I want something that tests to make sure that the EHRs are flawless in this way. We're flying airplanes, and I want every plane to land properly.
Just a quick follow up on that. Just a question for you. So when you think about that testing, do you think that is part of the certification would test that, or do you think that part of the criteria for certification is that the vendor has a robust QA/QI process around this, or both?
Well, okay. Fortunately, you gave me the both answers option because that is my choice. But if I had to pick one. I even though it's annoying, I'd rather have it be the testing process, just because every vendor's view of what a QA/QI process is varies quite a bit, and at the end of the day, the vendors have to sell their product, and promises get made and so forth. This is a patient safety issue.
Go ahead, Sue.
Well, I would just also say that this. You know, wherever we can figure out how to put usability into this, right? You know, having the website there on the script that I then have to copy and paste into a URL to get there is not meeting the spirit of what we're talking about, right? So, and people hate extra work. And some external, places lock down your access to get to an internet accessible place, right? So it would have to be able to be demonstrated that it's useful and usable by the end user.
Thank you. So I, as an end user, I just wanted to add that I agree with Chip's selection. I would want to see in the certification process a medication being ordered, a medication being dosed, and if outside the range an alert being fired and then being able to show that this alert is congruent with whatever data source is being used to create the alert. So I would want to see it from ordering to the alert and show the work as well.
Yeah, I mean, I this is Hugh Walter. I think both makes the most sense because you can't test everything in certification, and they need to have a process to be able to identify and solve problems. The one thing about the usability, while I completely agree that we need very usable systems and usability is a really big problem, I have real concern, though, of using certification as the forcing mechanism for usability. I think if there's some process of, user-centered design and those type of things, maybe, but just trying to mandate usability, I think, is problematic.
No, I agree with that. But, clearly there are some of the certifications that says that you have to demonstrate you use usage-centered design or feedback from your end users when you did this, right? And so at least inserting the end user or, UX designer in the process and being able to document that you did that is at least, we didn't wait till the last 2 seconds and code around this and, gets rolled out and everybody says this is useless kind of thing.
Great.
Yeah, and Steve, I'd just add that I agree with you entirely, except the alternative right now is that we're using the market to determine usability, and that's clearly failed. So there's got to be some other method. I think you're right. Mandating UI is like crazy. That's like mandating the weather. But right now we have too many examples of it not being focused on at all. And, and that's why we're here.
Probably more than a 10-minute conversation we got left. But, I agree the market has failed.
So this is Lauren. This may be a good time just to take a quick break for public comment since we're like right at the 10:20 mark. Is that okay?
Please. Thank you very much for keeping us on schedule.
Sure. Operator, can we please open the public line?
Yes. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And do we have anyone calling in into the queue at this time?
But not at this time.
Okay. All right, well, we'll turn it back to the co-chairs. I think we can probably utilize the last 9 or 10 minutes or so before we adjourn.
Sounds good.
All right. Carolyn, do you have anything that you want to bring in at this time? If not, we'll turn the discussion back to this recommendation or at least try to sum up what we heard today?
No, I think it's great to go forward with the 6 recommendation. Keep going on that. It's a really good discussion. Seems that we're really clarifying ideas and kind of narrowing what we want to say with regard to the list.
Yeah, so I think we reached a rather remarkable quick consensus on this. None of us wants to see the vendors being the source of dosing recommendations, but there was consensus that there are existing sources for dose range recommendation that should be integrated into the workflow process in the EHR, and that the certification should focus on walking through a medication dosing and medication dose recommendation process and demonstrating that the right information based on the information source being used reaches the pediatrician, and that there's also an element of show your work that the EHR lets the pediatrician identify where the recommendation came from.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Okay.
Love it.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, that's y'all's work. I'm just echoing it back. So wonderful. That means we're mostly done with this, except to ask Al if there's anything that he wants to add in form of the application program interface or the core data interoperability issues. I think at this point, they're kind of not necessarily seem to be required at that point, right? Maybe we lost Al.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. But yes, I agree. There's nothing really to add on this right now.
Okay. Alrighty, so I'm not quite sure if it makes sense to go on to recommendation 7. What do our ONC friends think?
I think that we won't be able to finish.
So then I would say
don't think we'll be able to finish in 5 minutes or 6 minutes, now 5 minutes. So I think keeping the trains running on time and giving somebody back 5 minutes of their life would be more valuable than trying to weigh into recommendation 7.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And unless there are any objections, I'll turn it over to Carolyn for comments, and then I'll give us what we can move on.
Well, thanks, Chris. From my perspective, the discussions that we've had today are exactly the kind of thing that the HITACH will find informative and helpful as we go forward with our work. And I'm really pleased to see how well things are gelling and how well the group is working together. So please, let's continue these good discussions next Friday.
Yay, us. Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Thanks.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you, everyone.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye-bye.